Hey, Culture and Conversations family. I'm your host, Jameson Smallwood, and I'm about to make you part of the conversation. Hey guys, thank you for downloading. Thank you guys for listening, and thank you for subscribing to Culture and Conversations. It really does help the show when you take the time to listen, share, and make other people aware via social media that you are in fact a part of the conversation. So before we get too far into this episode, please go by your favorite podcasting platform and application and leave Culture and Conversations a 5-star review. It helps when you endorse the show because people know that the show is worth listening to because you said so. Up next on Culture and Conversations, I have a great conversation and interview with Janice Jerome. Janice is the founder, CEO, and owner of the Restorative Justice Institute of Atlanta. Janice stops by to share her experience with restorative justice and how restorative justice is changing the way victims, offenders, and the legal system are interacting with each other. Up next on Culture and Conversations. Yes, I'm your host, Jameson Smallwood, and this is Culture and Conversations. Thank you guys for listening and being part of the conversation. I have a great episode planned here where we're going to talk about restorative justice. I saw the concept of restorative justice as a legal system alternative to being a purely punitive system where the victims and the offenders go through this process of having a restorative conversation to bring closure, to bring healing, and to bring the people who were affected as well as the ones who were involved in the crime together in a way where the human relationship is repaired and restitution is arrived at. And it was fascinating to me because I thought this was an innovative way. I thought this was a clever way of handling issues in the legal system, especially when it came to young children, teenagers, who when they get caught up in the legal system, they can do irrevocable harm to themselves and their reputation and their future going forward. And Janice, she stops by to share her experience as a restorative justice expert with us on Culture and Conversations. But before we get to Janice's interview, I want to play a clip for you. The clip you're about to hear comes from World Trust TV's YouTube channel, and it is an example of restorative justice with Sujatha Baliga. And Sujatha gives a detailed example and testimonial of how restorative justice was applied to bring healing to a victim of car theft, as well as the perpetrator of the car theft, a young man who grew up in very poor circumstances. And I think this is going to help you guys really understand how restorative justice is applied and gives a good backdrop for the conversation.
We received a case about a stolen car. And we reached out to the young person, and he pretty quickly took responsibility for it and was very open to meeting with his victim and making it right, and explained that he was really poor, but he was willing to get a job and try to figure out, you know, how to do right by the victim. So we reached out to the victim, and the victim was extremely unhappy that the case had been diverted. She actually knew a little bit about diversion because she worked for a law enforcement type entity, and was adamant that she had been out of pocket $4,000 in costs because of this car, and wanted to see $4,000. And so in meeting with the young person and his family, his mother is undocumented, working multiple jobs. They were living in the kinds of poverty that we just shouldn't have in the United States, with so many other people's children living with them just to have a place to eat. And I knew that this mother and this young man were not coming up with $4,000. And so the person I was training at the time asked me, so are we going to send the case back? Because there's no way this woman's getting what she wants. So I go back to her and I say, would you have any interest in doing this even if $4,000 might not be the outcome? Is there some other reason to do this? And she'd brought a friend with her that day, and he said, I would really love for you to move forward. And she said, I just want to meet with this kid and tell him that what he did wasn't okay. And her friend said, I really, really like to meet with this young man too. And so on the day of the conference, It was very powerful. Her supporter, the person who had come with her, at one point, as the youth who'd stolen the car couldn't remember what color the car was, and it became evident that he'd stolen many cars, and the victim is getting angrier and angrier, and you're never going to learn your lesson. And at this point, her friend leans in and he says, "I know you." And my heart stopped because I was like, oh, we usually research these things better. And I had no idea there was a pre-existing relationship between these two parties. And he says, "I know you because I used to be you." And he proceeds to tell the most powerful story about how he himself got caught up in stealing cars and it derailed his life and how he got his life back on track. And it was as if the rest of the room disappeared. And this young man and this man who turned his life around engage in a dialogue about how does one turn one's life around. And he says, you know, you have to stop hanging out with your homies in the way that you used to, but don't cut them out of your heart. Just don't include them in every aspect of your life. So you show up for the baptism, but you don't stay for the after party, right? And you always say, I got to get to work, and they respect that. So what makes you happy? What do you believe in, you know, about yourself? Or what are you good at? And the kid puffs up and he says, you know, I'm a really good artist. And his mother starts laughing. And she says, you can't pay this woman back $4,000 with your art. And just then the victim jumps in and she says, oh, yes, he can. Yes, he can, actually. She was so moved by this dialogue, right, that she says, if he paints me a Tinkerbell as tall as I am, she's about 5 feet tall, as tall as I am, I'll forgive all the debt. And we're all looking at each other like, a Tinkerbell? I'm sorry, did she say Tinkerbell? So I start taking notes, and she's describing the exact Tinkerbell and what color the Tinkerbell needed to be. And it had to be an old school one without too much cleavage. So she's very particular about the Tinkerbell. And the kid is really excited, but he's also like, I don't know how I would canvas and did it and what she's describing. And I'm like, we'll find you a community artist person who will help you with this. And so I was thinking of my friend Evan, who I knew would definitely be interested in doing this. And so ultimately, the young man does paint this. He just, within a few weeks, he got a job, raised enough money for all the art supplies. He wanted to do it himself. Painted the most amazing rendition of Tinkerbell on canvas, and the victim asked for him to bring it to her home and help him install it, you know? And then he ended up getting involved with other community art projects and actually getting involved with the program at Community Works, where he had been involved in this case, you know, and just helping out other kids who'd gotten in trouble. So his life turned around completely, and he stayed out of trouble consistently after that. And the Tinkerbell was really beautiful. But I think what's really, when people ask what do victims want, you know, it's different in every case. And I always think you never know, it might be Tinkerbell. Like, you have no idea what is going to leave a crime victim satisfied. So some people might say, oh, that's soft on crime. He stole a car and he gets to paint something. But if that's what the victim wanted, and that's what keeps him out of trouble for the rest of his life, then we should be really happy about Tinkerbell.
Up next on Culture and Conversations, we'll be talking with Janice Jerome, founder, CEO, and owner of the Restorative Justice Institute of Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Culture and Conversations family. I have on the phone Janice Jerome, and Janice is here to speak with us about an interesting topic that I came across when I was watching a show on HBO. The topic is restorative justice, and it's an innovative concept and approach to justice and punishment in the criminal system. And I believe it's gaining traction in certain states. And I wanted to bring Janice on to share her experience in working in this particular area of justice so that we would be better abreast of what this new system of justice looks like. So I'd like to welcome to the conversation Janice. Janice, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jamison. Thank you very much for asking.
All right. So, Janice, before we get too deep into talking about restorative justice, let's give my listeners a little bit of background here about who you are. You know, what is your particular practice as it relates to the legal system here in Atlanta?
Well, I was trained about 15 years ago by one of the pioneers of restorative justice here in North America. And I was working in, I've been working in Justice Department of Justice court system. And while working in the court system in Clayton County, working in management, the judge there, Judge Stephen Teske, introduced me to restorative justice. And he asked me to make sure I get trained and all my team get trained. I had a big team in Clayton County Juvenile Court, and quite a few of us got trained, but I became the only one, I believe at that time, just kept it going. We were sponsored by Kennesaw State University Conflict Department. We were sponsored by BP or an executive there. And then also Ms. Kay Prentice out of Minnesota came in with Gwen Chandler and did the first training. So I've been working in restorative justice with juveniles, with adults, with offenders, court system, school system, community, faith-based system, quite a lot of different areas. And most recently, University of Texas Institute of Restorative Justice there. I worked there as assistant director there. Right now, I do have a company here in Atlanta called Institute of Restorative Justice of Atlanta. And we are in partnership right now with Atlanta Pretrial Services. We also do services for youth during the summer. We have three programs that are free for kids called Spaces in the Rainbow. We do that every summer. We also certify people who want to be restorative practitioners. And we do consulting services.
Okay. So let me ask you this. What is a restorative practitioner?
Well, you know what? Before I can answer that, I probably want to answer what is restorative justice.
Okay.
restorative practitioner is basically a catch-all term. It is a term that's used for people who do practice the values and principles of restorative justice. Because restorative justice started in the justice system, and then other disciplines started to come in, like education, the name restorative practice became a cover-all, because it's not always about justice.
Okay. So let's go into that then, so we can sort of pivot off of that conversation point. So how would we best understand the definition of restorative justice? Because I have a definition that I've been working with the last, couple of months since I've heard this come up, but I'm not sure if that's the formal definition of what restorative justice actually is.
Restorative justice, it's a huge arena, and it's a lot to be said about. It's very difficult. It's one of those subjects that doesn't have an elevator spiel.
Okay.
I'm going to try and bring it on down, because when you read the internet and read books, it's saying so much. Most of the time, people are just, please just tell me the bottom line. Restorative justice is not new. It's been around since man DNA has been around.
Okay.
Man had to learn to live together in small groups, and they had to learn how to survive. So just like many, many years ago, when people gathered around trees to talk, they gathered around fires. You see today, families gathering around the kitchen to have a respectful conversation and to deal with maybe harm, hurt, conflict, or whatever is going on. So restorative justice is not new. It is about building relationships with respectful dialogue.
Okay.
It is victim-centered, but offender-sensitive. But if I give you the textbook definition, restorative justice is really a philosophy. It's a social movement and a set of practices. So that's what you would probably see if you read about it. It's a philosophy, right? Social movement, and a set of practices.
Okay. So let me ask this question. So, in the scenario that I was watching on HBO, there was a young man who had murdered someone, and the idea of restorative justice was introduced by the actual family of the victim, and they wanted to speak with this young man about the circumstances that led up to that murder. And one of the things that I was interested in is that they were so willing to have a conversation with him. Now, when it comes to restorative justice, is there anything there that mitigates the punishment of the of the of the perpetrator or the person who committed the crime. You know, is it a sense of, okay, the judge will hear the request from maybe the family or the victim for restorative justice and say, well, we'll, you know, maybe not punish this person in the traditional sense, but we'll give them the opportunity to go on maybe an alternative route about seeking restitution through the legal system?
Well, you know, you don't have to do restorative justice to seek restitution.
Okay.
Restorative justice, and if I could backtrack just a tiny bit.
Sure.
Not much. It started in North America about 40 years ago, but it's been around for hundreds of years.
Okay.
It started in Canada, where a group of youth had did some vandalism and theft over several victims. And what you and I would call today the maybe social worker or court worker mm-hmm. went to the judge and asked the judge as an experiment, can we bring the victim and the offenders together and see if they can talk about this? And so the judge said, okay, because normally that's not what happens. In that time, normally you did the crime, you get punished.
Mm-hmm.
So they brought them together to have a dialogue. And believe it or not, they all came to a resolution that everybody could live with. And from there, the success of restorative justice, which started in the justice system, began to happen. As you kind of went forward with that story, one thing about restorative justice, it is values-driven. That is so important.
Okay.
It's not a regular meeting. It has principles. It has principles in restorative and principles in the circle process. If a judge hopefully ordered someone into restorative justice, it is a hope that the judge maybe has some understanding of how that works. There is a volunteer spirit that must come along with that.
Okay.
And that's important, too. That volunteer spirit, so if an offender, that offender had a volunteer spirit to say, yes, I do want to meet with my victim. And the victim has to say, yes, I do want to meet with my offender. And when they come together, they're definitely addressing their values before they ever even talk about why they're there.
Okay.
So restorative justice, they have something called what we believe to be true or the seven core beliefs. And in that, it is important that certain things come out of a meeting. The facilitator or the restorative justice practitioner must be skilled too. This is not where someone just kind of walks in a room and say, I'm going to mediate you in a restorative way. Now, you can do that, come in and mediate, but call it what it is. It might not be restorative. There are certain elements that must exist in a restorative process.
Okay.
So, and I want to go back to your question. I wasn't trying to skip around, but I wanted to kind of go back because remember, there is a philosophy here
mm-hmm.
in restorative. And a volunteer spirit is extremely important in this philosophy of restorative justice. There are several other elements that must be present in order to go forward. For example, anything that is agreed on between that offender and that victim is not a rule or law. It is a consensus guideline that they come up with.
Okay.
So it is not, so let's just say the offender and victim came together. The offender brought in his mother and his lawyer. The victim brought in her brother and the prosecutor, the lawyer, or whoever was there at the table with them, because each one can bring a support system. Each one comes in with a volunteer spirit. Or if it's not a volunteer spirit, that whole entire process is at risk.
So, okay.
So if you've got six people in the room doing a restorative process, the agreement must be consensus, which means it needs to be agreement that everyone can live with. There is no voting in this process, not at all.
Okay.
It's an agreement. All voices are heard in a restorative process. And I don't want to try to avoid your question. Give me your question again.
No.
Because I think, okay,
no,
we were skipping around too fast.
No, you're fine. You're fine. You were asking.
Okay.
I mean, I think the part I was asking about that you were kind of getting towards is that, you know, the restorative piece is obviously You said you talked about it involves a victim and as well as the offender. And you bring those two people together to have a dialogue about discussing, you know, what they did, what how they found themselves in a situation where they were, one person was offended or you know, hurt through some, you know, through some particular crime. But at the same time, you don't leave out the person who was the offender. You bring them into the conversation so that they can reach a resolution about this. And, you know, the question I had is then how does that philosophy or that moment where they sat down and had a conversation, how does that affect the offender and what happens to them and through the legal system?
Well, and again, I just have to go back just a tiny bit.
Okay.
Say that, let's go back to the judge. He wants them to have a restorative process. The judge might turn it over to a skilled facilitator, but the facilitator has to make sure that that particular offense or crime is suitable for restorative. Everything is not suitable for restorative justice.
Okay.
So in this process, you do preparation. So a skilled facilitator would meet with each one individually. He or she, the skilled facilitator, would actually meet with everybody who's going to come to the table. So everybody has to have a volunteer spirit and wants to do that.
Okay.
So when you do preparation and let's say the facilitator says, yes, Your Honor, this is good for a restorative process. All parties agree that they want to come in. Before the parties even come to the table, the facilitator tells them entirely what's going to happen, what questions are going to be asked. There are no surprises in a restorative process. So actually, the skilled facilitator is having a restorative circle with each individual before they ever even come together.
Okay.
So by the time they come together, people walk in the rooms wanting to be there, and they walk in the rooms with the thought that their values will be used while they're there. Values, honesty, trust, kindness, support, whatever value is important to them. It's very important in the restorative process that that comes in the room with that person at that time. Okay? So that preparation is extremely, especially the type of things you're talking about. It's not restorative, it's not mediation. And I'll tell you why it's not mediation. Restorative is not, a lot of people say, it's not forgiveness. Restorative is not forgiveness. It's not reconciliation. It's not designed to reduce recidivism or repeating offenses. It's not a program or a blueprint. And it's not just for minor offenses. The reason why it's not mediation or necessary forgiveness is when you think about mediation, you bring two parties in the room. There is no preparation for the mediator. I am a mediator, so I know. Okay. There is no preparation. The mediator will get that case on the spot, never met who's there. And the mediator, in so many words, brings in the guidelines. That's the opposite of a restorative process. Remember I said that there's preparation, and a relationship is built with the facilitator before the two go into the room together. So in mediation, the basic job is, Jameson, if you owe me $100 and we go into mediation, well, really, I just want my $100. I don't care how you're going to get it to me, when you're going to get it to me, and I don't care what's wrong with you.
Sure.
But when we come out of that room, I want my $100. So we go in the room, and you say, here, Janice, here your $100. I'm tired of hearing you talk. Okay. What has happened here is a mediation. It is not a restorative process. Why? Number one, I didn't bring in my values. I came in mad, okay?
Okay.
I want my money. So I didn't bring any values in there. Guidelines. The guidelines are told by the mediator. In restorative, everyone contributes to what they need to be able to sit in that space, not just the facilitator. So, but the most important part of this, why mediation is not restorative, is because, and I didn't have a time to go over this enough with you, restorative is about addressing harm, needs, and obligations so that healing can take place. In mediation, we just want to get to the bottom line. We're not addressing harm. So, you know, I want my $100. You gave me my $100. And when we leave the room, I still don't like you. My people don't like you. You still don't like me. And your people don't like me. We still have harm.
Mm-hmm.
But I got what I needed.
Okay,
I got my $100. So that's the difference in restorative harm. So you can have a mediation, but restorative can come out of it. You went in as a mediation, but all of a sudden harm could get addressed. So you would say, Janice, I'm really sorry that I took your money, and I want to give it to you. I didn't know you were suffering like that. And I said, that's okay. And then my people are like, it's okay. We're addressing harm.
Okay.
Recognize when that restorative process happens in a room. It is at that point where a relationship, remember, it's about building relationships, not about the $100. That's the difference. In mediation, it's about the $100. In restorative, it's about you and I being able to be together in a good space, either in conflict or good time. It is about that relationship that we build.
Okay. So let me kind of give you the playback of what you said in my head, and that way I make sure I'm understanding it the way that that you intend. So in your example of $100, so let me tell you something. Let me tell you an amount that would make me really mad. Let's say I gave you $1,000.
Yeah.
Now, I could walk away from $100, but $1,000, me and you gonna have to we gonna have some difficulties, right? So you bring us into this room, and we've got $1,000 difference between us. We got, you know, one of us, you know, let's just say I owe you $1,000. So with restorative perspective and philosophy, I'm going to have to address how not paying you made you feel. And at the same time, you're going to have to acknowledge my circumstances and my inability to pay you and honor the arrangement that we made, so that we both come out of there having more empathy towards each other. And that is the foundation that you talked about, the relationship between the two people being restored and built upon.
No, that is totally the transitional system you just spoke of.
What system is that? You described it
that's
as something.
The current system that normally happens in a conflict where somebody owes somebody money. What you said was when those people come together,
okay.
It could be just to a support system. But when you and I come together, it is you voluntarily must take accountability. It is not you are made to, you're asked to, you're forced to. Nobody's going to ask you to take accountability.
Okay.
It will be your volunteer spirit. That's the difference.
Okay.
That's the difference. It's a volunteer spirit. That is extremely important in this process. Restorative is not a replacement for the American current justice system. It's not an alternative to prison. And it's not a cure-all for what happened. It is an addition to an addition.
Okay. Okay.
It's not a replacement. If something is working in our American justice system, let's keep it working.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to replace it. But it is an additional process. Let's talk about the difference real quick. In the traditional justice system, which I grew up in, and I grew up in Atlanta.
Okay.
It's all about what laws was broken. Okay? Who broke it and what's their punishment. If I was driving my car and the police pulled me over, before he pulled me over, he's probably already identified who I am, right? Why did he pull me over? He's already probably determined that I've broken a law. So he knows me, who I am, who broke it. He's determined probably what law I broke. And then the last thing is, when he gave me that ticket, he's basically saying, you're being punished for what you did. Now let's look at that in a restorative realm. In a restorative realm, something happens. It's who was harmed, okay? Who was harmed is the key. What are their needs? What do they need to be better? And whose obligations are these? It's a little different, okay? Where harm and restorative makes the justice system sort of become humanized in so many ways.
Okay.
In traditional system, crime is a violation of law. In restorative, crime is a violation of personal, a friendship, or relationship. That's a difference. Let's say that one more time. You ever seen a paper that says the state against Jameson Smallwood and in the traditional system? It would say the state against Jameson.
Okay.
So you committed a crime against the state. In restorative, you committed an offense in a relationship. Okay? That's the difference.
Okay. Now, let me go back through that scenario then. So the two people who come together in my $1,000 scenario, they voluntarily want to be there. No one made them come to this meeting. They voluntarily decide to come to this meeting. And
after preparation was done with them.
Okay, yes, after preparation was done.
Mm-hmm.
And the person in the meeting who voluntarily showed up, who, you know, I'm the one who owes you the money. So in a voluntary sense, I'm there to better understand what it is that this $1,000 has harmed you voluntarily. Nobody's making me understand this. I come there with a heart to try to understand this. And that's part of the values that you talked about bringing into the room with
me. Right. Mm-hmm.
And the person who I owe the $1,000 to, you're there to try to understand, you know, like I said, the circumstances voluntarily around why I didn't pay you and how you can repair that relationship. Nobody's making us do this. This is us purely coming together as two people who are trying to salvage the relationship. And we're volunteering ourselves to this meeting so that we can go through this process of restorative justice. Is that a little bit better? Is that a little bit better?
Mm-hmm. It sounds better every time you say it. Much better.
Okay.
Now, be mindful this coming together in a circle.
Okay.
Everyone is equal. So let's just say we had a facilitator. He or she is equal to you and I. Okay?
Okay.
In mediation, everyone is not equal. So that facilitator also participates in the dialogue. Everyone's voice is heard, and it creates a safe space. There's something called a talking piece. Did you run into that when you saw your restorative justice program?
No, I didn't see that piece.
Okay. There's phases to a restorative process. There's elements and components. There is a talking piece. It's an object that means something to somebody that is passed from person to person that gives the soul holder permission to speak. So we would have something that a facilitator brought in the room, or anybody could, that means something. We would explain what it is, and we'll do this in preparation because there's no surprises when these two come together. And they would tell them about the talking piece, which everyone has a voice. And it will go around the room, and people will be freely able to speak. And others will listen with their heart, hopefully, and speak with their heart. So the atmosphere and the tone in a restorative process is so much different than a mediation in a room with a mediator. Okay, a mediator is not there to address your harm.
Mm-hmm. To your point, I see what you're saying with the difference in the nuance there. The mediator doesn't care about how do you as a person feel and after you leave the room. They care about a hard and fast resolution of the particular disagreement. So they only care about the $1,000. They don't care about the two people who are going to have to live together in some capacity after the $1,000 situation has been resolved. So the part that makes restorative justice different is that you said something really, I think, impactful there. Previously, you said that if it was me breaking a law, then it's the state of Georgia versus Jameson Smallwood. But when you talk about it from a restorative justice perspective, it's really addressing the harm that I've done to someone else. And then that someone else having the heart to resolve that with me as I have the heart to resolve it with them. So it's not, you know, so in it's a little bit different nuance there because, I mean, I'm trying to draw, it feels like it draws a little bit from the Christian philosophy around justice and grace, you know, and because it talks about, you know, just in that sense, what I'm thinking, Janice, is that it's a, you know, Jesus basically says, how can you love God, but then you hate your fellow man who you see, who looks like God every, you know, who you see every day who looks like God. And he's talking about you trying to keep all of these rules and regulations between you and God, yet you at the same time, you're out here abusing people and hurting people. And like you said, causing harm. So it removes the legalism from the situation and focuses in on the person and the people who are involved in the relationship that this particular scenario finds them in.
Right. Restorative comes from quite a few systems. It comes from the alternative dispute system.
Okay.
Where, let's say, neighbors were having arguments, and back in the day, both of them just went to jail. Well, judges started doing a diversion, which, and some of them do a restorative process of the diversion. It also comes from the Christian movement.
Okay.
It comes from the prison movement when, especially in the late 1900s, early 1900s, when people were just treated inhumanely. And it definitely comes from the indigenous community or cultures, the principles and the practices does, especially for North America, the First Nation community, and many other Ojibwe, many other communities contribute to the principles that we're now trying to follow, the philosophy. Again, it's a philosophy. It's a philosophy, a social movement, and a set of practices.
Yeah, because I remember seeing it, you know, in various groups I've been a part of, the idea of taking turns to talk, where you have something that symbolizes the talking stick, quote unquote, and you pass it around, and the only person can, who can speak at that moment is the person with the talking stick. Yeah, that ensures that the person who gets heard, who is holding the talking stick, and no one else dominates the conversation and overtalks that person.
Right. It is based on the medicine wheel of indigenous culture, where it is divided into fours. If you got a round circle and you divide it into four pieces in a restorative process, the first thing that happens is an introduction or getting acquainted. In mediation, you don't necessarily get acquainted. Okay?
Okay.
After you get acquainted, the number's fours. That's the first thing that happens in that circle. You get acquainted. Second thing that happens is you build trust. You talk about things or you say things that builds trust. You're setting the tone. And now we're on number three. We're finally getting to the real reason why we're there. So be mindful. We had to do two other things before we talked about the real reason why we're there. We had to get acquainted. We had to build trust. Then we can address our concerns. After we can address our concerns, then we take action or make a plan. But in mediation, there is no four phases. So in a restorative process, again, one of the most important parts is values are brought in. Values are the glue, just like gasoline for cars. Values keep that process respectful. And then you set a tone, and you finally get to the real reason why you're there.
Okay.
So that's why... in a truthful restorative process, mostly will not fall apart if the philosophy is applied and the facilitator is skilled enough to know that her or his job is only to keep that process safe so there can be respect for dialogue. A facilitator in a restorative process cannot recommend, cannot suggest, cannot refer, can't do any of those things, okay? Cannot even repeat necessarily what a person said unless that's repeated verbatim. So that's a little different from mediation. Are you still with me?
Mm-hmm. So okay. I can't go and say, for instance, you know, if I told you, you know, Janice, I've been out of work for, you know, 2 months, and that's why I didn't pay you back the $1,000 as I promised. Then the mediate, then the person who's facilitating the restorative justice session, they can't go and say, "Now, Janice, you heard him say he's been unemployed, and that's why he ain't got your money." They can't say that. Okay,
that's correct. Everyone is equal. You will not touch anything, whatever that person puts in that space. No one touches it. No one tears it apart, because the restorative process is when I, as a human being, and you, as a human being, make a volunteer decision to take accountability.
Mm-hmm.
If I make this decision, chances are I'm going to stick to it. But if you tell me I got to do it, I'm probably only going to do it while I'm being monitored or watched. But if I just, that's the restorative process. A relationship is being built between me and you, because I voluntarily want to be there. I understand that my values are important. There's a tone set before we even begin. So in a restorative process, you wouldn't walk in the room and say, good morning, everybody. We're here to address what just went wrong. You took her money. You owe her money.
Okay.
In a restorative process, there's an opening and a closing. Okay. So a facilitator would open up. She would literally just open up. She could open up with a poem, a song, or whatever. But she opens up the space. It is a sacred space based on indigenous culture. He or she would open up. After she opened up, she would explain the talking piece or remind them, because they already know about it, because she's interviewed everybody before they got in that space, remember?
In the preparation.
So she'll remind them of the talking piece, uh-huh. And then after reminding them of the talking piece, they would discuss guidelines. That's behaviors. What do you need to be able to be in that space? I might say, in order for me to do this, I'm going to need to stand up every 20 minutes because I got a bad back. Okay. We can put that down. You know, she has to stand up. Or someone might say, I can only sit in this space if there's confidentiality. Okay. It's not a rule now. It's a guideline or an agreement that we all make together in that space of how we will be. So there are guidelines that the group makes together in a circle process. We still haven't got to the reason why we're there.
Sure.
Okay. We've done guidelines. Now we're going to go back to those four phases I talked about. Introduction. You know, I might say, the facilitator might say, I like everyone to just introduce themselves again to the circle. And then next she'll do some building trust. She might ask them a very relaxing question, like, how is your day going? How is everybody's day going? Or what is the funniest thing you did in school? In high school. So you got adults and youth. It's good to have adults and youth mixed in this type of process. You don't ever want to see all adults and one youth. And everyone just kind of talks about certain things that the facilitator has brought to kind of bring down tension, you know, relax. Now, so we build trust. Now we finally going to talk about the real reason why we're here. And believe it or not, when you get to number three, I've seen this over and over. When you get to number three, it goes so fast. I don't know why. It's like people have gotten all that stuff out of the way, and they're there because they want to be there, and they are feeling the tone of the space. This type of process, there is room for your spiritual aspect. There's room for it.
Okay.
And that's a good thing. I don't know about mediation. I am a mediator, but I don't think there's room for it. If you bring it, mediator ain't going to say anything, but it's not necessarily room for it, that process. So, go ahead.
No, I think that is a great overview of restorative justice. And, you know, I didn't understand it when I was watching the show completely, because that was the thing I was curious about. How does this actually impact, you know, your interaction with the justice system? Because one of the things that I'm acutely aware of is that, you know, I'm an African American, so I'm a black guy. So, you know, black children oftentimes when they encounter the legal system, they get treated like adults instantly. It doesn't matter how old they are, they get treated just like they're adults. So if if a child gets found with some marijuana and they're 14, they don't get the benefit of, oh, he's 14, he's experimenting, he's learning, he was just curious about the drugs or whatever, and he just did this, he did that. No, they get treated just like they're, trying to be Pablo Escobar, but the thing that made restorative justice interesting to me is that it presented an opportunity, it seems, if you have a judge who adopts that philosophy in how they practice law, or at least how they administer the law, that they would have the ability to say, okay, you know, you were doing this, and we're going to put you in a situation where there's some restorative justice that can take place, so that, you know, instead of you simply going to jail or getting some kind of record, you know, that's going to follow you for the rest of your life, you have an opportunity to learn that, okay, this in this scenario, this is the harm that was caused. This is the person or, you know, the people who you harmed. And at the same time, but you had to voluntarily come there looking to, you know, take part in that process. And just at the, like you said, the people who were quote unquote harmed, they have to come there and, you know, be voluntarily, you know, willing to, you know, heal that gap between them and the person who got caught with whatever, you know. And the challenge with that is that I think my example is kind of what leads me into one of the questions I have for you. What happens if you can't readily identify a victim? Is that one of those situations where restorative doesn't work or isn't applicable? Because a lot of times people say that drug use is a victimless crime, you know, or drug possession. So is that one of those situations where you can't necessarily apply restorative justice practices and the philosophy?
You can apply restorative circles. It's a container that can hold almost any emotion. One thing about it, there's circles, and there's different kinds of circles. Remember, I said it's a set of practices. You can do a victim offender circle in restorative. You can do a talking circle. A talking circle doesn't necessarily come up with any solutions. You're just talking. You can do a circle of support and accountability, where there needs to be, say, the drug use person, where that person needs a long-term plan that can be activated at any time.
Sure.
So in that case, yeah, you can do circles, and that person can have people to come voluntarily to the circle. It could be his family, his friends, his teacher, his employer, all could come together in the circle and discuss what they can do to help this person with a plan that can be used at any time and activated. So, yeah, definitely there's many types of circles, educational circles, problem solving, community building, reentry. You've been maybe away from school, or you've been in maybe detained or locked up, conflict circles. They go on and on. There's so many types of circles there. Remember, restorative is not a program. It's a process. It's not a cure-all. It's not a replacement. It's not therapy. It's not mediation. It's not reconciliation. It is not forgiveness. It's not touchy-feely. Mm-hmm. It's not soft on crime. It's not a way for us to avoid consequences in the system. Restorative is a process that seeks to address harm so that healing may take place or things can get better.
Wow. Wow. So let me kind of, I guess, transition us towards the end of our conversation, Janice. And I've gotten so much good information here. I'm just really appreciative of you obviously making the time for this call. Let me ask this question. I'm someone who's been through several conflicts in my life, and I'm sure as I keep on living, I'm going to go through more conflicts. Why isn't restorative justice in this concept of us working to, like you said, address harm? I think that's the key piece there, right? To address harm, not to blame and accuse and point fingers, but to your point, address the harm that's happened between both people or both parties or the community of people who are gathered. Why isn't it that restorative justice is more popular, and why isn't it more well known that there are these alternatives out there to helping to bridge the harm that's been caused between people who find themselves in these situations?
Well, restorative, one thing, is not a program. It's a way of life. So that's one key thing. It is, again, not a blueprint. Number two, if I'm not mistaken, there was a 2015 report that says over 33 states in the United States does have some type of restorative language.
Okay.
In their law. Now, necessarily implementing it is another thing, but
sure.
There is a lot of states. I think the last time I saw, it was 2015, they didn't include Georgia in there, but I know that Georgia is in there now. Also, nationally, 1.2 million black kids are suspended from K-12 from public schools. 55% of them are from those 13 southern states. So there's a lot of disproportionality going on and 82% of prisoners in America are high school dropouts.
Wow.
The system, and even in school, teachers are dropping out after 5 years at 30% rate. So there's a lot of problems going on in our system, and the justice system does know their problems. However, getting this to spread, it is spreading, but getting it to spread in a big way, I think if we just keep on watching, it is becoming a buzzword. And when people find out, it's not a touchy feeling. It is not a way of avoiding punishment, if I can use that word.
Yeah.
It's more of accountability.
Okay.
So I don't think the justice system is running from it as much as it needs to. They do not maybe know the unreported great things and statistics that have come out of using this process. We got Clayton County have done a lot in the juvenile court there, and there are school officials have gotten together with the court system, and many things have decreased, especially weapons on school grounds. I think it's decreased maybe 70-something% by using a restorative alternative process.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So, you know, you have a business, you have a company that focuses in on restorative justice. Now, with your company, what are some of the functions of your company? Are you a trainer? Are you a facilitator? You know, help us understand the services that you offer so that people who are interested in learning more about restorative justice or even bringing restorative justice, the concepts and the philosophies into their organization, they can reach out to you and do that. What are some of the things that your company offers, Janice?
Well, I am, as a former assistant director of the University of Texas Institute of Restorative Justice and Restorative Dialogue, one of our responsibilities was to address every district, every teacher in the state of Texas and deliver restorative, which would have been a volunteer process for them to come to. Texas has 10% of all the students in the nation. So I did a lot of traveling the last couple of years around Texas, conducting training and introducing restorative on the educational level. My company does diversion processes with court systems. Like I said, we are in partnership with Fulton County Court. We also train and certify people who want to become practitioners in this work. We also do retreats. We just did a retreat at Camp Lucy in Dripping Springs, Texas, where leaders in this work came for a retreat. Because remember, as facilitators, we need an outlet too.
Okay.
We are conducting the trainings, but we also need somewhere to go. So my company does that. We help. We do consulting and help implementation of this process. We deal with faith-based community, and we also do any organization. Restorative is a container that can hold any discipline. There's not one that it cannot hold, all disciplines. So if anyone is interested in becoming a practitioner, they can reach out to me by email or phone. And just give me a call, and we can talk about if you want to know more about it, you want to be certified in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. And what I will do, Janice, so that my listeners can find your website easy, I will take your website and post it in the show notes so that when they get this episode of the podcast, they can see the link to your website and come visit you.
Okay.
So
that's great.
So, yeah. Well, I guess as we close, Janice, is there anything else that you would want my listeners to think about as they consider, you know, adopting restorative philosophies in their life? Anything that you can kind of encourage them on to think about, you know, managing conflict and resolving harm in their life and in their relationships through restorative?
Restorative is not something to do to someone. It is not. I don't look at someone and say, you need a restorative process. You've got so many problems. Restorative is about self-transformation.
Okay.
And so I've been doing this 15 years, and I cannot believe sometimes I get paid to work on myself. That's what I'm doing, working on myself. In working on myself and restorative, because I'm equal to all the participants, so every circle I've ever done, I am just as equal, and I bring my stuff, and I work on my stuff. So I've seen my adult children grow because I changed. So for me, restorative was not an opportunity. It is my destiny. It is something. It's a way of life. It's not a career. It is a way of life. So I just say to any listener, if you're interested in this more, please read about it, go to conferences, give me a call. It is a process that has, oh my God, I have dealt with so many things in my life, even back to childhood, by sitting in circles with people. Things that I didn't know were still bothering me. It's a beautiful process, and I love it. And I invite you, Jameson, to be in a restorative circle one day with me.
Oh, well, that sounds like a great experience, and I would love to do that because, one, it would help me understand it better for myself, and then I'd be able to communicate it better as I talk about it in the future on my podcast and in other platforms. You know, I'm a minister. Well, I don't want to say a minister at my church. I hate to use that word because it sounds so formal. But I work at my church, teaching Sunday school and doing some other ministry work at the church. And when I hear you talk about these philosophies that are a part of restorative, you know, it to me, it speaks to what we all need in our lives in various areas. Because a lot of times we see relationships just fail and crumble, Janice, because they don't have the ability to resolve the harm that's been done. And I think if we can find more ways of using tools like the concepts that are found in restorative justice to help people address harm that's happened between them. And as long as you said they come there with a willingness and a voluntary spirit of, hey, I want to work on this with this person and I want to work on these different things through these mechanisms, then I think that can do nothing but make, you know, people's lives better in the process. So, yeah, I would love to come and be a part of a restorative circle with you and learn from you and learn that process and see how it all works. I would love to do that. And I would like to thank Janice Jerome for being part of the conversation. Please check the show notes to see all of my information and links about Janice and her company, the Restorative Justice Institute of Atlanta, as well as a citation and a link to that video that I played for you guys that talked about an example of how restorative justice was applied. Well, with that, we are at the end of our episode of Culture and Conversations, and we just want to thank you guys for listening. If you want to interact with the show, you can do so. Culture and Conversations is the Facebook page. If you want to go over to Instagram, Culture and Conversations is the Instagram page. And if you want to send me an email, reach out to me, cultureandconversations@gmail.com. We have a lot of great things going on. I hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving, and we're headed into the holiday stretch, and we have a lot of great shows planned for you. So as my goddaughter would say,
my goddaughter.
Yep, that's right. You guys be blessed, you guys be good, and make sure that you tell somebody next to you that you love them. Peace.